Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Faculty and Development. I'm going to pause.
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Faculty in Development podcast. My name is Megan Carpenter. I'm an associate professor in the psychology department.
I'm Gabriel Dorfman Hopkins. I am an assistant professor in the Department of Math, Statistics, Computer Science, and Data Science.
That's a mouthful.
I know, yeah. It's growing.
In our capacity as members of the Faculty Development Committee, we are bringing forth this podcast today to talk about assessment bias and how it is introduced into our coursework and how it impacts certain students.
Yeah, and I think the goals for this podcast, at least for me, is I really want to learn more about this and sort of like how this is appearing in the way that we teach in different ways, in the way that we assess our students. And I'm really excited. We're going to do some interviews of other colleagues around campus, and I'm excited to learn a lot from them in different ways that people are sort of like trying to detect and combat bias in different fields and, you know, trying to learn from each other through this.
Absolutely. Our collective brain power.
Our collective and interdisciplinary
brain power. Absolutely. So what do we mean by bias in assessment? We're talking about anything that makes an assignment or a task unfair to a student. And there's a lot of ways that this can be introduced into our courses, both from our in-class dynamics and who we call on to answer questions or who we challenge to try harder on certain problems that they're trying to solve, and also in the test questions that we write and the kinds of written assignments we ask our students to do. So it can show up in implicit ways where it might be below the level of our conscious awareness. We might not realize that we are introducing bias. And it could also be explicit bias if there are certain student groups that we have maybe negative perceptions of, particularly with respect to their scholastic goals. So some of those biases that can be both implicit or explicit could be race or ethnicity bias. It could be cultural bias. It could be gender bias in our expectations for who would do well or who would not. And it can be socioeconomic, right? There's any number of biases that might impact how we expect our students to do in classes. And one particular form of bias that I wanted to introduce in this podcast is the idea of confirmation bias, or the idea that we as individuals are prone to attend to information that confirms what we already believe. We seek out evidence that confirms our existing beliefs and thoughts and kind of ignore anything that disconfirms it. So in a classroom space, you might have two students where one of them is really diligent and is always early to class, taking notes, asking questions, the model student, and in the same class, a different student who frequently shows up late, who is on their phone a lot, and maybe doesn't engage in participation. Both of those students could turn in the same quality of work, but because of your perception of that more diligent student, you might assume that their work is better, even if qualitatively it is the same level of quality, right, of what the other student had put forth. So there's a lot of ways that this can impact us. And particularly, we want to be mindful of who is being impacted the most by these different kinds of biases. Certainly, students whose first language is not English, they can be impacted by assessment bias. Students with learning disabilities, students that are from racially or ethnically marginalized backgrounds, and students who didn't attend a college prep school find themselves at disadvantages, especially when we're talking about research papers where there's a very formulaic kind of academic tone people need to achieve. And that might be really difficult for people who didn't have English as a first language, or for people who struggle with moving information from understanding a research article and translating that into written text. There's a lot of different ways that this might emerge.
Yeah, and so I guess, you know, it's important to do a little bit of self-reflection and try to think about, like, how can we even tell if our assignments are biased? I think, you know, if you're faculty, you've sort of succeeded within a certain kind of system that then it's very easy to try to replicate. And so you might not even notice that these sort of assignments that maybe you excelled at that got you to the place you are now, maybe have biases that are preventing entry to other folks. And so I think asking yourself some questions as you're doing sort of assessments and designing coursework is an important thing to do. And I think one thing that really you want to keep central in your mind is, like, does the assessment match the learning goals? Are they sort of relevant to the things you're trying to teach and trying to sort of have people grapple with and understand? Or are you assessing things that you're not teaching, right? I'm in math a lot, and sometimes people conceptually maybe understand what's going on, but have small arithmetic errors that change the numbers that come out. And these are, you know, maybe have a disproportionate impact on the output of their grade, even though it has nothing to do. I'm not teaching you how to add, and it has very little to do with, you know, the high-level concepts that we're exploring. And similar things might happen with grammar, with spelling, with the kind of language that's being used in a paper or in a presentation. What kind of structures are you forcing people to emblemate and replicate in order to be thought of as, like, speaking well enough or doing addition well enough or something like this, right? And so with that in mind, you know, it's important to ask yourself, is it really possible for all students to succeed in your courses, or does a student have to have a certain background? Is a student going to be, like, significantly disadvantaged by not having a certain background and be unable to succeed in your course? One thing to think about also is, like, you know, are the assignments that you use, are they reflective of the diversity of the human body, of the student body, right? Can you see that, you know, thinking about if you can see diversity in your assignments, or if you're really just projecting one view of the world so that people who see themselves that way can feel more engaged and can work through it as well. So this is, you know, before you even sit down and are doing the grading of your assignment, you might be presenting a worldview that's more interesting to, you know, and more engaging to certain subsets of the student body. And that might just preemptively sort of have a bias in terms of who buys in to your assignments. And then there's a question of, like, do you bend course policies for some students, maybe, but not others? Or are you able to sort of bend grades for some or not others? Or is there room for that, right? I think, you know, over the years, I think of teaching, maybe you develop some sort of instinct of what good work looks like. And then that might sort of tip the scale sometimes. You've got this continuous grading system. You look at a glance and you're like, oh, yeah, that looks like this, and don't go into so much detail. And sometimes I think, like, if you're allowing yourself room to sort of trust this instinct over having, like, a concrete practice or a concrete policy that you're working through, that's a easy place for implicit bias to really slip in without you even noticing. And so thinking about how to avoid these sorts of instinctual decisions that you're making when assigning grades. It can just, like, not leave room for implicit bias to sort of sneak in.
Absolutely.
And then one thing I'm thinking about, something that I don't do and something that I don't even necessarily know exactly how to do, but that I want to learn is how to sort of collect data on this, what to do with all this data. How can you collect data on, like, the assignments that you're giving and how people are performing and sort of break it into different groups and try to sort of see, maybe there's bias that you're not feeling that's hard to sort of self-reflect on. Like, is there a way to sort of collect this data and analyze it in such a way? So I'm just putting this out there as something that that I'd like to do is sort of collect meaningful data on, like, who's performing well in my assignments and try to reflect on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's really meaningful. We have come up with a list of potential solutions to this, or ways that we can be more mindful in the assignments that we are creating and how we're assessing learning. And so we'd like to introduce them for you now, but as Gabriel had mentioned, we are soliciting some ideas from our colleagues as well, just so that we can kind of crowdsource this. Hopefully all of us come away with a better understanding of how to remove bias from our assessments. So one really easy thing we can do is grade blind. You can do this in Canvas, where you can make it so that you don't see the student's name as you're grading the work that they've submitted online. You could also do this by having students write their student ID number on an exam rather than their name. And this is really good because there might be some students in your class that maybe have engaged in some negative social behaviors with the right people that you might see their name on a test and think, oh, this person, right? So that automatically creates a lens that you are doing this assessment through where you are already a little bit miffed before you even get to the work that you are grading. Mm-hmm. So grading blind, taking away the name, not knowing whose student work you are grading, that's a one easy thing to implement. Another thing that maybe is less easy but is super helpful in reducing a bias but in also making grading a little bit easier is to create clear and well-defined rubrics where you try to make the assessment as objective as possible. And in that way, you can catch yourself if you are maybe being a little more generous with one student than you are to another. And I would add to that, making sure to give students the rubric that you're using with the assignment guidelines, mm-hmm. just so that they know what they are being assessed on. Another tip, although I don't know how practical this is, maybe for folks that are teaching in the FYP that have like co-teachers or co-educators in the classroom, is doing inter-rater reliability. So making sure that if two different faculty were looking at the same assignment, that they'd come to the same grade. That'll give you a sense of how much of that assessment is really subjective. And that's, you know, a big red flag if you've got two completely different grades coming from different colleagues. You might also think about providing more flexible assessment too. If your goal is to assess how well students are able to synthesize information from research articles, could you give them options in ways that they can demonstrate that? Like, for example, you could choose to do maybe a traditional research paper, like a literature review, or you could choose to present a poster to the class where you're speaking about these ideas, right? And they're, in both cases, communicating and synthesizing this research information. But speaking in front of a poster might be a more advantageous approach for folks who maybe struggle with the writing process due to learning disabilities.
Yeah, that's a really interesting idea. I think something I've done a lot is try to have a lot of different types of assignments, but I've never like given students the choice. I've just been like, okay, there's going to be oral stuff. There's going to be stuff you turn in a couple times. There's going to be tests that are in class. There's going to be a bunch of different ways so that, you know, some of it you're good at, some of it you're bad at, and maybe it evens out. But I've never really thought about giving sort of options or weightings like that. I think maybe that can help people set themselves up for success.
Yeah, hopefully. You can also think about, so we mentioned earlier that it might be the case that you are not directly assessing your learning goals. Maybe you've got some irrelevant concepts that you are assessing. And so think about how much are your assessments testing things like memory, or language fluency, or anything else that's not actually the target goal of the assessment, right? So Gabriel mentioned arithmetic, right? Like, is that really what you want to test? And so you can think, if I'm not wanting to test memory of something, if I want to test how well students are able to, say, solve an equation, do they have to memorize the equation? Mm-hmm. Right? Is that actually an important part of this in demonstrating their learning? Or can they be provided that? And same thing with any other class. If you have a quiz or a test, does having open notes actually mean that they didn't learn something or that they can't communicate something? Because having traditional tests without accessing information may mean that a lot of your assessment is about memory and ability to focus. Right. And that's disadvantaging some students more so than others. And then another suggestion that requires a little bit of a lift here is to look at any kind of quantitative assessments that you do. Maybe it's a test where students are answering multiple choice questions and try to analyze if there's certain questions that particular groups of students are getting wrong, but not others, right? Are there certain questions that, say, women are getting wrong that men don't? I came across this really fun example when I was doing some background research for this podcast where someone had mentioned a question that had, it was a math question, it was a word problem asking about YAC, and it was a question about football. And women in the class were getting it horribly wrong, not because they weren't interested in football. I mean, in America, you cannot, there's no like national league for women. There's no women's football team in college or in high school, right? So they can be interested in it, but they don't have personal experience playing it in most cases. And so YAC apparently is yards after catch.
Oh, and yeah.
So,
that checks out.
Yeah, so it was really disadvantaging women in the class who had never had the opportunity to play the game.
Right.
Yeah, so are there certain questions that you notice a pattern in who is not getting it, right? And what does that mean about that question? Does it mean that you need to do a better job of teaching that content, or does it mean that that question needs to go away?
Right, and I guess this comes back to the sort of data collection thing. So this is something you can actively try to do and look into. Yeah, cool. And so what are a couple of ways that we can sort of do this? So actually, a few of the people we're going to try to have on the show are going to talk about types of grading, different kind of just assignments and grading structures they've worked on, which include contract grading and labor-based grading, where students are sort of trying to meet certain benchmarks rather than, you know, you start with 100 points and you start docking, which is very common in math, I think. That's just, you know, that's what I was when I was a grad student TA, that's what I was doing. And sort of trying to restructure classes like, okay, if you meet this benchmark, you'll get this. If you put in this much time and labor, you're definitely going to get here. And then, you know, certain above and beyond benchmarks will have to be met to go, you know, up to a 4 or something like this. And we're going to hear a little bit about that. And a similar kind of thing is mastery-based grading, where, again, there's some sort of benchmarks. Like, I'm not trying to, you know, figure out, oh, you're an A student, you're a B student, you're a C student. I'm going to have some benchmarks. I want to make sure you mastered topic A. And once you do, you've completed that assignment. It's a yes, you have, or no, you haven't kind of thing. And you work your way kind of gaining mastery of certain topics, working through it. Now, this implementing this really takes designing an entire course around it, right? It's not just like, oh, this is how I'm going to grade this test. But I think, you know, there's a lot of evidence that this has been very, very helpful at sort of breaking down boundaries in, or like boundaries to entry into STEM fields in particular. Mm, I know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, one thing I've toyed with a lot that is, I think, not quite, you know, building a whole class around mastery-based assessment, but is something that I can just do with my assignments that I already have, is to have sort of fewer and more discrete options for grades. So I've been experimenting with assigning a 0.0 for missing, a 2.0 for something that maybe is revise and resubmit, and a 4.0 for something that I'm just going to accept. And I think about that as like, as though you're submitting a paper, revise and resubmit, accept, or desk reject, right? And this, you know, this way I can have high standards for that 4.0, but there's no sort of room for this implicit bias to say, well, that's a 3.6 and that's a 3.4 because maybe I just felt better for the first person. And so, I mean, you might have heard like this 2.0 I called revise and resubmit, and I would say this works well alongside allowing students to revise and resubmit their work. I think we do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we can model that ability to try again.
I think, you know, and this is, yeah, exactly. I think it's really important to sort of think about, like, what are you really, when is the first draft what you're actually doing? So, you know, giving someone space to attempt something than to sort of take your feedback and try to improve it, I think is like a more realistic thing. But sort of something, I think, as I'm thinking about this, and something I like to think about more is like, really, what is the point of assessment in the end? Like, what are we really doing when we assign grades? I don't know. I got into teaching, and that was just like one of the things that you do. You
get
grades. I got grades, so I continued to give them.
Yeah, they'd stop doing the work if we stopped giving them the grades.
Well, that's the thing, right? One of the questions is it a carrot on a stick? Is that why you assign grades? Are you assigning grades because students wouldn't even try if they didn't get a grade? I've tried to sort of not worry about it that way. It's one of the ways I tell myself, you know, that I've tried to sort of been like, okay, really, what am I doing when I'm assigning grades? I'm thinking about it as a mechanism for providing feedback. So it's not like a stamp of approval, like you get an A, you should go to grad school, but not you. But more like, I want students to sort of try, and then I want them to get feedback, and then I want them to engage with that feedback. And in some way, a numerical grade doesn't do that very well. This is why I'm a huge fan of revise and resubmit. 2.0, revise and resubmit, folks read the feedback.
Yeah.
And we'll give it another shot. And so, I don't know, a sort of high-level question that you can have is, like, how can you fit the grading and assessment that you do into the sort of broader learning goals that you have for the class or for the degree? What is someone trying to take away from it, right? Being really good at math tests is not why someone does a math major.
It's not?
Well, I mean, you would think it is, because that seems to be, like, the thing that,
right,
that you know, people get into math for. That's the way that most folks engage with math for such a long time. And yet there's this sort of beautiful and rich world of discovery and exploration that feels sort of completely separate from being really good at math tests. And so I think that's true in a lot of different fields, sort of reconciling the way you think about, you know, assessment based with, you know, the kind of, you know, learning goals that you have, and the beauty that you might see in the subject. Mm. But of course, you know, there's this outside influence, right? Students think about the grades a certain way, and the right. prospective employers or graduate schools think about grades a certain way. And so, you know, you want to try to reconcile the way that you think about grades and communicate that with your students, with these sort of outside influences as well. I'm asking a lot of questions and giving no answers.
That's all right. That's all right. That's why we're going to have to interview some of our colleagues.
Yeah. So I guess the final thing, well, at least on my little list here, is this sort of question of, like, what can you do and when, right? It feels like, you know, we're going to hear from some people who really completely redesigned their classes in order to have more equitable and sort of student-centered grading practices that were based around giving feedback and developing certain specific skills. But that's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of labor to completely redesign a course, to completely redesign all the assignments, and then to sort of workshop it over a few terms until it works. So what are some smaller steps that you can take to start taking steps in this direction? And so I don't have all the answers. We mentioned a few things earlier. But maybe this is sort of a carrot for y'all to come back to the sort of second or third episode of this.
Yeah,
episode.
I think scope creep's going to be a problem. It's just going to keep going and going.
But we are going to have upcoming podcast interviews with other faculty at this university about changes that they've made in the assessment process. And through this process, we're going to try to generate a list of sort of, like, small things that everybody could just implement without completely redesigning their task. I once read this book about sort of, it's a great book. It's called Asked and Answered, Dialogues on Advocating for Students of Color in Mathematics. Mm. And it had this thing called the 5% plan, where they were saying, okay, a lot of these are big questions, but what is something that you can do to make your class 5% better every time you run it? And the joys of exponential growth means that, sure, 5% every time, but it really becomes, like, it can be really impactful to sort of continuously look back on your work. And so that's sort of the title that I would like to give, you know, the couple of things that, you know, you can take away with having to spend all summer redesigning your classes. Yeah. That could make a big difference in your class. So we're going to try to come up with some 5% plan as well.
Yeah. So stay tuned for the following episodes about assessment.